This is West Coast Project. My name is Mike. I'm here with Jamie. Hey, Jamie.
Hey, Mike.
We're here for Mr. Robot.
Yep.
Season 1, Episode 5, Exploits.
Mm-hmm.
Jamie, Fernando's in jail.
Yes, he is. And I was right.
Well, of course. But what were you right about this time?
Okay, so, I can't talk about it because that's next episode. So I broke my rule. I called you, I texted you and told you what I did. I watched episode 5 and I could not stand the suspense and I had to watch episode 6. So I broke my rule and I found out I was right.
So you're up to 6?
Yes.
Well, when we were doing 3, weren't you up to like 5? You've been a couple ahead for the last few episodes.
No, actually, when we were on 3, I had already watched 4, but then I quit, remember? And then I was not going to watch any others. And so when we did 4, I had only seen 4.
Okay. I can't even remember what was what back over which episodes, but I think it's okay to be ahead a little bit.
Okay, good, because I couldn't help myself.
So Fernando's in jail. He's going to get 11. He's such a goofball. He's going to get 11 years based on Elliot's evidence that he... I have a cold and I'm about to sneeze. I can't stop. But he's about to get in big trouble for this evidence Elliot submitted. And his partner is also an idiot, telling him how we save money, bro, by putting our network up on, Twitter and Facebook.
Yeah.
And marketed their drugs through social media.
Right. And that's his brother.
And I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's his actual brother. And what's his name? I want to call him Ronaldo Fernando, right?
Wait, it's his actual brother in the show or in real life?
No, on the show.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so he's really upset with his brother because that was his brother's idea. He wanted to save them operating costs as though they were an actual business. And so he's like, dude, you know, we saved so much money last year. And that wasn't really the point.
Oh, well, he's a dope.
Right.
But he sees the pills bottle, right? That's how he knows it was Elliot. He's looking at the photos of the evidence, and he sees that pill bottle. That's how he knows it was Elliot, right?
No, actually, I don't think that's what. No, because all the evidence would have actually been from like a screen. I don't know. I don't think that's how. Because when Elliot turned in the evidence, it wasn't anything that he. That I mean, it would have been screenshots, right?
Yeah, I know it was evidence on Fernando, but okay, so how does Elliot know? How does he know it was Elliot?
I don't think he knows it was Elliot. Unless.
Yeah, that's how he finds out in that little sequence with his lawyer and his brother. And she says, look, you idiots, you put everything on social media. It's not, you don't have to be a brainiac to figure it out. It's easily hackable. And she starts talking like that, and the light bulb goes on over his head, and he sees the little pill container, and I think it reminds him of Elliot.
Okay, well, maybe the pill container reminded him of Elliot, but I don't think it was Elliot's pill container. But I think that he would have figured it out anyway because, you know, he knew that Elliot was, like, really smart. And that's where I was wrong in my prediction because I thought that he would have blamed Shayla, but he was blaming Elliot.
Yeah, this all connects. In his head, it connects it to Elliot. So he's like an idiot, but he figures it out from some of the things the lawyer says and the pill bottle and the social media and the hacking and all that. He puts two and two together.
Yeah.
All right, so next scene, Elliot and the boys. By the way, Jamie, this is a West Coast Project and a podcast for Mr. Robot. Sorry, I don't even remember if we did an introduction.
Yeah, I think you did.
We did our episode last week with Michelle. That was fun. But this is our 5th.
Yes.
Episode of 10.
Yep.
What else are we doing, Jamie? Let's break this up a little bit here.
Okay, so we do The Americans.
When does that come on next?
I don't know when the new season is. I should look it up. And then we do Better Call Saul.
Yep. And what else?
And Mr. Robot.
All right.
And I can't get you to do Scandal, so.
Yeah, I'm watching too much television, man. I might end up doing BoJack Horseman, and I don't know.
Who are you going to get to do BoJack Horseman with you?
Michelle and I might do The Slap if that comes back on. We might do The Last Man on Earth. I don't have anybody to do BoJack Horseman with me yet, but I have a friend who's thinking about it.
Oh, really?
Was that your sound effect? Sound like, uh-oh.
That's okay, so I'm really sorry. That is something that it's a kind of alarm that's on my computer, and I cannot stop it. I don't know how to make it stop making noise. Ever since I upgraded to Windows 10, like, there's stuff that I cannot fix anymore. Like, it used to not, you know, I never used to have noise, but now it just doesn't work. Even if I set it to not make noise, it makes noise.
Yep. Windows Evil 10. There you go.
Yes, exactly. And you know you cannot downgrade? Like, you literally can't downgrade.
I think you can. I think there's a way you can.
Well, they tell you when you install it. They're like, you can't. Okay, so here you go. Fourth season of The Americans doesn't premiere until 2016.
Yeah, it's in, like, the winter.
Oh, I hate that. It's too far.
Well, it's already the 10th month tomorrow.
Yeah, I guess.
Sorry about that interlude, that podcast advertising interlude. But Elliot and the boys are at the restaurant. Mobley, Romero, and Mr. Robot and Elliot. And Mr. Robot, now this is why this show is so damn hard to figure out. Because Mr. Robot's bumping into people. He's pushing his way through the line. He just puts a tip in the tip jar, but he really is bumping into people to get that Steel Mountain badge from somebody.
That's right.
But when he's bumping into people, they're looking at him like, dude, come on. You know, like he's excusing himself. He looks like a real guy.
Yeah, okay. So this is the thing that's like really mysterious to me. And okay, so there are a couple of things that have caused me problems. All right. So the first thing that's caused me a problem is that I feel pretty convinced after last podcast that Mr. Robot is an actual figment. Like, I don't think he's real. And so because I no longer think he's real because you were cluing me in, I'm having a hard time because he's actually interacting with people. Like, he spoke to what's her name? Awful. What's her name? What do I call her, Darling? Yeah, Awful Darlene. He spoke to her, like, directly and interacted with her this episode. So I don't know what it means.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't the only one cluing you in. Sam Ishmael was cluing everybody in.
Okay, so here's the other thing. I'm not so sure anymore that that Awful Darlene is actually Elliot's sister. And the reason I'm not is because in this episode that's now, episode 5, when Elliot's dad, who I think is still Elliot's dad, Mr. Robot, he says, like, when Darlene is, like, really mad and she's freaking out about Dark China, he says, somebody talk to this woman. And that just didn't sound like a very dad thing to say.
What made you think that Darlene was Elliot's sister last episode?
Okay, so a bunch of things. Like, it was me remembering what happened, like, okay, so there's a lot of proof to that because I was telling you in the first episode of the series, there was that exchange between Elliot and Darlene where she called him a name, the name I won't say, and then Mr. Robot walked up and he was just kind of like the dad interfering between the two of them because they were bickering because Elliot was like, Mr. Robot, she called me a name, and he's like, oh, she's like that. So it just felt to me like a family thing. When I started adding all this stuff up together, like her breaking into his house, it's kind of like a sister breaking into her brother's bedroom or something. You know how siblings do that kind of stuff. And so I started thinking about like all those things and how nothing is what it seems on this show. And you were asking me about Darlene, like what I thought about her. And so I started to think maybe that there was a relationship there. And just based on a bunch of other stuff that we've talked about in other podcasts. So I thought maybe, but now I'm not so sure. I think maybe she's just a person.
Do you think it's okay that Ishmael has Mr. Robot really look real and really look like a phantasm sometimes? Do you think that's okay?
Okay, so I think it's okay as long as it's well planned and there are rules in his fictional universe. I think that the real key to be able to being able to write something that is that sort of in reality and out of reality is that there are specific rules that govern that universe. And if you stick to those rules and somebody gets the key and they understand the rules and everything operates according to them, then it's not lazy writing. Otherwise, it's just lazy writing.
Yeah, I don't think it's lazy writing. I'm just wondering how other people perceive it as believable or not. Like, is it okay? Is it acceptable?
Oh, it's okay if it makes sense. If the person, the really smart person who's thinking about it and who understands it, if they can make sense of it, and if at the end of the day, like when this series is over, if we can look back and say, well, that was perfect, it made perfect sense, but we just didn't know at the time, then that's fine. But if it's like, you know, just kind of whatever, then no, that's not okay.
Well, how can it make perfect sense? He's either got to be real or not real. And if he's real, he could bump into people and say, excuse me, and have people speak back to him and have conversations and all that. And if he's not real, that would not make sense.
Except for the fact that we're seeing this through Elliot's eyes.
Right, but you're seeing through Elliot's eyes other people interact with this guy.
Right. You know, which, I mean, if we go back to that whole, the Fight Club paradigm, then, you know, I mean, that could legitimately happen. Like, he could be looking on, you know, and he could be really the one who's having the interactions.
Well, I think it's okay. I accept it, and I really like this show. I just don't know why I think it's okay. I don't know why I accept this so readily. But it is very entertaining, for sure.
Well, I will tell you this. I have become very skeptical of Sam Ishmael and Ismail, and I really hope that it's good, because I will be really mad if it's not.
Okay, well, this episode is about exploits, Jamie, and we hear these guys talking about, or I guess Elliot thinking about, how people make the best exploits.
Yeah.
So Elliot evaluates his team and what kind of exploits they may have in their makeup, and calls Mobley a glutton. He's shoveling food and cokes and stuff down his fat face.
Yeah.
And Romero's a hypochondriac.
Yeah.
As they're together, he's recognizing that.
Mm-hmm.
And when they get to Steel Mountain, their plan is to find this guy, another slob named Bill Harper, and he's going to be their first exploit at Steel Mountain.
Yeah.
This is pretty brutal what they do to this guy, Bill Harper.
Oh, it's so awful.
But they meet him in the lobby. Elliot meets him. First of all, Elliot immediately forgets his alias name. He's sitting there waiting for a tour.
Yeah.
And he encounters a couple stumbling blocks here. First of all, appointments are required for a tour. And he says, I'm Sam Sepiol, bitch. I'll get a tour when I want one. And he's Sam Sepiol, this young billionaire, technology billionaire.
Yeah.
Of course, Mr. Robot is in his ear the whole time, giving him words. And here's another thing with Mr. Robot. Romero and Mobley are in the van just sitting back letting Mr. Robot do this communication.
Right. But, you know, the stuff that Mr. Robot is saying to Elliot is all stuff that Elliot would just be thinking in his own head.
So they could just be in the van waiting and he's just thinking it?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, okay. It's funny, though, because Mr. Robot gives him, like, pretty active advice, and Elliot's very passive, and he improvises from whether Mr. Robot is real and in his ear with the microphone or in his head. He still improvises. He does it differently than what Mr. Robot advises him to do.
Yeah, but that could be just like your devil on the right shoulder, angel on the left shoulder. Or vice versa. You know how, you know, maybe your better mind will tell you to do the right thing, but your baser mind will tell you to do the wrong thing. And so maybe that was what that was.
Well, Elliot's just too shy to be this bold with this guy, I think. He's too socially a recluse socially. He doesn't have the skills. But anyway, he just says, hey, look me up. Look me up sometime and you might change your mind. And Mr. Robot tells him to walk slowly so he has time to look him up. And Harper does that. He looks him up on Wikipedia and finds out he's this $17 billion technology genius. I guess worth his time now.
Yeah, Mobleypedia.
Mobleypedia?
Yeah.
He goes and invites him back in when he finds out he's a special person.
Yeah.
Have you ever done any editing on Wikipedia, Jamie?
No, but I always find errors. And actually, they invited me to edit, and I won't do it.
Well, anyone can do it, right?
Yeah, anybody can, but you have to. I don't know. There's some sort of something you have to do to start doing it, and I don't want to. I spend all day doing that stuff.
All right, we get a commercial and come back, and Angela is packing in front of Ollie. Ollie wants to marry her, Jamie.
Okay, let me just say this about Angela. When we started out, we were like, oh, she's the angel. She's not such an angel. And I have to say it's refreshing to me because instead of being the victim, she is like seriously, seriously strong. I like that.
Yeah, all these characters have various shades of gray to them. They're not angels or devils. They're complicated.
Right. Yeah. But you know how we were talking about her, like she's supposed to be this, you know, sweet thing because her name is Angela.
Yeah. She's still pretty sweet, though. She's on the sweet end of the scale.
Yeah. I mean, compared to the rest of the people on this show.
Just not entirely sweet.
Although, you know what? I think that Shayla probably had her like edged out just a little bit in an existential sense. Like, you know, like if you had everything on a scale about who was the sweeter person, I think it would be Shayla, except that Shayla was like a total drug dealer. And she probably ruined a lot of people's lives because of that. But otherwise, she was the better person.
I think so, too. I think Shayla is actually more innocent and sweeter than Angela.
Yeah, I think so.
We were right about Angela, too, with that CD and badge. She did take Ollie's badge and logged in as him and did everything on his computer.
She sure did. And I was, you know, when she was in that room, in that scene, I was like, oh, my God, this guy is going to murder her. Because she didn't feel a single bit of compunction about just laying it all out on the table. And whenever something like that happens in a TV show or a movie or something, I always think, about to die, to the person who does that. Because you're not supposed to do that.
Yeah, but not Ollie. Ollie's a marshmallow.
Apparently.
I think. I mean, he seems to be. He doesn't seem to have a vicious bone in his body.
Yeah, except, well, okay. I will not comment.
You don't want to spoil?
No, I was going to say something funny, but it's a terrible joke.
And you don't want to tell it now?
Okay, so I'll say, you said he doesn't have a vicious bone in his body, and I was going to say, except for the one he used for his other girlfriend.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, that's true. He's kind of an evil person, too.
Yeah.
A trickster. Maybe not an evil person.
Yeah, well, he's got some bad to him.
All right, Jamie, the Steel Mountain Tour continues. Harper is really proud of this place. And Mr. Robot just tells Elliot, he's kind of listening in, he just tells him, get rid of this guy Harper and get into the mission. Tear Bill Harper down.
Yeah, that was painful.
So here's where Romero and Mobley were kind of watching Mr. Robot work the plot. And their plan is to break this Bill Harper dude down. And while Elliot's considering this, he sees himself down the hall getting abused by his mother. So I think he sees himself getting broken down, right? Is that what that, do you think that was the meaning behind that?
Well, Mr. Robot said, you of all people, Elliot, should know how to do that, how to break somebody down. You have experience with that. And so that's when he looked down the hall and he saw that sort of, you know, like little image of his mother breaking him down. And so he was remembering that and he realized that he does know what to say. And he said exactly the same thing that his mother said to him. She told him he was nothing and he told Bill that he was nothing.
Yeah, Elliot tells Bill, if you died, would anyone even care? No one would show up at your funeral. You're nothing.
Yeah.
Just brutal stuff.
Awful.
And that causes this guy, Bill, to cave in. These are his exploits. He's just desperate and lonely, and he's easily breakable by people he perceives as probably more important than him, right? When he looked up Elliot and thought he was this big shot Sam Sepiol. By the way, Sam Sepiol, is that somehow connected to Sam Ishmael?
Huh. I think it is.
I think I remember an interview where Ishmael said something about how he was making a joke about that.
Huh.
But Sam Sepiel, Sam Ishmael, it's too alliterative to not have some sort of a connection. So they break Bill down. He just says, I need help. I got to get another employee. And this was their plan. They were going to get this other girl, Wendy, and do something with her. What were they going to do? Tell her that her girlfriend was pregnant or something? Or
okay, yes. So she was his supervisor, and she's a lesbian, and her girlfriend was pregnant and going to have a baby, but she wasn't there that day. And so they had to get somebody else.
So they do get what they do. Elliot's whole plan is to get on another level of the floor, level two, different floor that's inaccessible at Steel Mountain. So the new supervisor shows up, and she's not exploitable because she has no Facebook profile. They can't find her.
Right. They can't find out the thing you can exploit. What was that?
Oh, it was a text.
Oh.
Her texts are exploitable. No, I don't know. What do you mean?
They used a word for that. Like what their weaknesses, but I forgot what the word was that they used. But anyway, they couldn't find a weakness for her because she doesn't have a Facebook profile. She's not on, any of the social networking. She doesn't have bad credit. She's not in debt. She doesn't have any bankruptcies. Like there's nothing on her. So they don't know how to exploit her until they figure out the general rule, which is that everyone is exploitable in the same way. You just have to be general enough. You can't be specific. And so they just went for something really general, like, oh, your spouse is in the hospital. And, they knew she had a husband because they had, they were able to locate his mobile phone number. And so they used that to hack and to clone it and make it look like the text to her phone was coming from the husband, and he said he's in the hospital, and that was all it took.
Yeah, it's probably a guess. Like, they didn't probably have any medical records on the husband. They just said something like, I'm at the hospital, honey. It's everything we expected and worse.
Yeah, that's what it was, a general message. He said something like, it's the thing we've always feared. And that would apply to pretty much anyone if their spouse said, that they're in the hospital. It's the thing we've always feared. I think most people would think, oh my God, I have to go. Instead of being suspicious.
Right. Very, very general, but very scary.
Yeah.
So Elliot tries to make, so she rushes off and Elliot tries to make it to level two by picking the lock, going down the stairs. But Jamie, he's on the wrong side of the building.
Yeah.
He ends up in the parking lot or something, or the doorway to the parking lot.
I thought he was in a stairwell.
Yeah, he never got out of the stairwell, but the stairwell only led to the parking lot.
Yeah, he had to go back up and around, I think is what they were telling him. Go back up and around because you're on the wrong side of the building. And that's when he came out to go around, and then he ran into our buddy.
Our buddy Tyrell. Tyrell is going to have quite an episode here.
Yes, he is.
So that happens. He meets Tyrell and we get a commercial. Come back from the commercial, Jamie, and Shayla, sweet Shayla, now is a cowgirl waitress at Wingstravaganza.
That's right.
It's a big deal to her, being a cowgirl waitress.
Yes.
She's never been a waitress. It's a new beginning for her.
Yep, she was in pharmaceutical sales.
Yeah, until Obamacare fucked it up.
Right.
Which, now you try to connect those dots.
Okay, so I laughed at that. I loved that. I really did, because, that's kind of there's kind of an undercurrent about that, like, in popular culture, that's kind of a thing that people say. And I just really loved it. I think the writing on this show is smart. And, he put that in her mouth, and I don't know if it's the actress herself or if it's the actress portraying the character, but I love Shayla's reactions. Because, she said that, and then you could see the bemused expression on her face, like she was laughing at her own joke. I liked it.
Well, yeah, just the career track from a pharmaceutical sales rep to a waitress is not the most upwardly mobile track.
No. And that's why the other waitress was like, what happened? And then her reason was just so funny. Obamacare.
And then, so that's not logical. But then how does Obamacare fuck up being a pharmaceutical salesperson?
Oh, my God.
Those people don't go away.
No, that totally happened. Like, that's, I went to my eye doctor, right? And when they first started with Obamacare, going to the eye doctor was insanity because first of all, the prices of all the drugs have, like, skyrocketed. Seriously, like, everything has gone through the roof because the pharmaceutical companies don't think that they're going to make money anymore because they have to cover all these drugs at this, like, lower price. And so it's crazy. Like, everything goes up. And the doctors are mad about it because somehow it's affecting how they get paid. It's just, it's been quite a thing. And, you know, I am a person who I'm willing to pay extra so that the people who are not as advantaged as I am don't have to go without. But Obamacare, my God, I had it for a minute. It was so expensive. I was paying like $400 and change a month for my premium. And I still had to pay like, it was like $1,500 a year in deductibles. It was bad.
Well, the funny thing about this whole exchange is the other waitress just kind of sums it all up and goes, okay. pharmaceutical sales to waitress, and it's all because Obamacare fucked it up. All right, well, here's our specials tonight. She just rolls with it. You go back to Elliot in the hallway. He's watching a Steel Mountain commercial, or like, not a commercial, but their promo video that's playing constantly in the hallway.
Oh no, I thought that was a commercial.
Yeah, but it's running in the building.
Okay, all right.
You think they have a TV set running, like they're watching a Steelers game or something, and a commercial came on?
I guess not.
I think it's just like the cloud companies have their own, you know, spiel running on monitors.
Yeah, I gotcha. I think that's
for
right.
For visitors. So Elliot watches that as Tyrell is showing him around. He's like not paying any attention to Tyrell.
No.
And then we get the little tidbit that Hezbollah and ISIS financiers are visiting Steel Mountain too.
That blew my mind.
What do you think Ishmael's message was there?
Okay, so, Sam Ismail, I think that he is, like, Lebanese or something. What is he?
I don't know.
S-M-A-E-L. I'm looking him up. Let's see. Where is he?
I think in a lot of ways, this is kind of like True Detective, where... you can't, it's hard to change the world, but it's easy to comment on the world. And, I mean, the writers of this show can just make these smart acid comments about how politics work. And he's clearly doing that. He's saying, okay, everybody's in bed with everybody else at these upper levels. Big industry is in cahoots with evil, other big evil people in the world.
Yeah. I mean, that's right. And that's, okay, I can't find him. I'm sorry, but they're both from the same country. Actually, Sam Ismail and the guy who plays Elliot, they're both American. Like, they were born here, but their parents are from like someplace in the Middle East, and I can't remember. It's Lebanon or Egypt or somewhere. It's one of those countries that are kind of close to Africa and the Red Sea, but I can't remember which one. But I think that was part of his, like anytime he does something like that or makes a statement like that, I think that there is definitely something to it.
Yeah, it's his political opinion.
Yeah.
Just like Nick Pizzolatto in True Detective. He's never going to get the city of Vinci to change in real life, so he can make this scathing commentary on it by writing about how people are corrupt. And I think that's what Ishmael's doing here. There's no reason in the plot for these two guys from Hezbollah and ISIS to be in the episode. Not that I know of yet, anyway.
Yeah, no, I think it was really interesting. I think part of it is that, that you want to show something like that, like how sort of legitimized these awful organizations are, you know, when it comes to money and power, you know, because, and that's actually true in a lot of ways. I don't know about ISIS and I don't know about Hezbollah. Well, actually, I know a little bit about Hezbollah. And, you know, they're one of those very sort of controversial, tagged as a terrorist type group. And, you know, but it depends on where you're from and it depends on how you look at it, because there are factions of people like, you know, Palestinian people who look at Hezbollah as being like, you know, pretty decent, because they're the only group that kind of gets, you know, medications and things to the people who are, you know, encamped, you know, in the West Bank. And so, you know, I mean, it's political, but it's interesting that they're considered to be power players in Sam Esmail's universe.
Yeah, I think it's clearly a clear message of like terrorists are in a major corporation in America having a friendly meeting. It's not, he's not pointing out the good points of Hezbollah. He's pointing out that enemies of America are within the upper corporate levels of Evil Corp and probably other corporations in real life. I think that's his message.
I don't think Hezbollah is an enemy of America. I think that they are just like really, they're an enemy of the, of an enemy of America, of a friend of America. Like they're enemies of Israel, but they're not, you know, they don't have any beef with America as far as I know. But that, you're exactly right. I mean, like this, what was fascinating to me about that is that it's just these two guys in suits. Like you would never think that they have anything to do with these horrible kind of frightening, you know, situations, but you know, they do.
Yeah, Elliot looks more like a terrorist than they do.
Most certainly.
All right, so back to Elliot. He lies to Tyrell and tells him he's there to do a routine data process check. And Tyrell kind of buys it, but not really buys it. Says, what, they would send you to do that?
Yeah.
And,
Tyrell
wants to have lunch with him. And Elliot's smart. He switches him from the cafeteria to the private dining room because that's closer to where he wants to end up on the right floor in this place.
Yeah, that was really interesting. And I thought that was another one of those situations where we're kind of like surprised at how savvy Elliot is, because it took one word, or actually one phrase, you're going to eat down here, you know, kind of thing. And that's all it took. And it's really interesting because Tyrell thought that he was manipulating Elliot, but Elliot was manipulating Tyrell before the whole thing, you know, kind of unfolded.
So yeah, he's found Tyrell's exploit is his ego.
Yep.
And that's what he uses. So this executive dining room they end up in, Jamie, is really gloomy. I would have rather eaten in that open cafeteria.
Yeah. I don't know.
But they get down in there to the executive dining room, and Tyrell's making fun of the waiter. It's like picking on him. He's a loser. He's an ordinary cockroach serving a salad, making 30 grand a year.
Yeah, it was so awful. And, you know, it just kind of, it's interesting to me the way that this character is written, because, you know, I don't know where a person would get that kind of an idea. You know, I think that you would have to really, really think about the most odious aspects of a person that you could come up with in order to have something like that come out of a character's mouth. Because, you know, when I think of somebody like that, like a waiter who's working in a, you know, in a nice restaurant or, you know, dining place or whatever it is, who's an older person, I sort of think of them as being genteel and, you know, mannered, and, you know, and that they're doing, you know, a nice clean job. I don't think of them as being beneath me.
I would have to say, I would have to admit that I think along the lines of Tyrell, that it is kind of a loser job for a guy like that. I mean, because compared to Tyrell, he's like this upwardly mobile, upwardly climbing, striving, consuming, killing people just to get whatever he needs. He'll do anything to get to the top. This guy, to him, looks like a total loser. He's just moping along being a waiter. But I kind of agree a little bit that it's not the most, you know, I don't know. It just makes me sound horrible, but it's I don't look at it like you do. I wish I could.
I mean, okay, so I think about different things, because maybe this dude has like, okay, all right, I'll tell you a story. When I was in college, I dated this guy who was like amazing. I loved him. He was just a great guy. And He worked at Popeyes, the chicken place. And there was this guy who was working there who's like this old dude. He was like 60-something. And he was working at Popeyes and mopping the floors and doing all the, you know, stuff just like everybody else. And my boyfriend, Billy, was just the sweetest person. And so he befriended this old dude, even though nobody else really wanted to talk to him because he was this old, crusty dude who's like doing this menial minimum wage job, right? So Billy became friends with this guy. And it turned out that this guy was doing all this training because he was going to open a restaurant. Like he was going to buy a franchise of Popeyes and open it. And he wanted to learn the business from the ground up so that he would run it well when he had his own. And he hired Billy to be the manager of Popeyes, you know, because that was somebody that helped him out and had good character and was a decent person to him. And, you know, so it worked out.
Yeah, that whole judging the book by the cover thing is—it's a pretty good life rule, I think. I think you're right. You shouldn't judge people. You should just kind of let them be who they are, and the truth about them ultimately will come through. Because a lot of times you are wrong if you make snap judgments on people.
Yeah, I mean, and it's not good anyway because we all have our own faults, and you never know what somebody sees, you know, when they look at you.
What are you trying to say?
Okay, so I'm trying to say that, I might think I'm awesome, but somebody else looking at me might be like, oh gosh, that girl's really short, or, you know, or they might think I'm, you know, not so bright, or, you know, whatever it is, they might not judge me the way that I judge myself.
Yeah, I know, I'm just kind of teasing you. So Elliot goes to the bathroom and throws up. And thinks it's withdrawal, or we do through his mind, or somehow it's because of his withdrawal. And he says, "Am I Tyrell's malware?" What the hell does he mean by that? How could he be Tyrell's malware? Like Tyrell's Achilles?
No, I thought he said, "Is Tyrell my malware?" That's what I thought.
Oh, maybe he does. So that's why. So he's sick. He's like, his throwing up represents ejecting the bad Tyrell from his system.
Right.
Okay, that's probably the way I should have heard it.
Yeah, I think that's what he said. And I thought that was pretty clever. I liked it. And I like that there was no way for us to know whether it was the withdrawal or if it was just him, you know. I mean, I would have thought that he would have gotten ill from just, well, first of all, from being anywhere around Tyrell. He's just odious, that guy. But then also from what he was going to do. I mean, that had to be, I couldn't have done something like that.
Just being afraid, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So he puts the Raspberry Pi on the thermostat, and Tyrell comes in kind of while he's doing that. Mm-hmm. And he admits that he knows that he framed Terry Colby and that his father, I know your father worked at Evil Corp. I'm not turning you in, Elliot. I just want you to know that I know your weakness, and your weakness is revenge.
And he said that's so common, or something like that. Like he said, it's such a common weakness to have, or something. Like he didn't respect him as much because that was Elliot's motivation.
It's Elliot's exploit.
Yeah.
You think it's true?
Maybe. Maybe.
I think it must be. I think it must be because Elliot, I don't think Elliot really cares about the financial condition of the world.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I don't know that that's anything because he doesn't care about money. And, you know, the things that we've seen him take action because of are generally things that concern justice.
Right. The porn guy at the coffee shop.
Right. And I think that the only reason that he might have an interest in any kind of anarchism is, you know, through that situation of him wanting to bring justice to something.
So revenge is a normal or popular human exploit. And Tyrell then jokes about himself not being human.
Right.
I'm better than human.
God, how that guy.
And he smarmily says, enjoy your drive. I'm taking the helicopter back to Manhattan.
Yeah. Enjoy your long drive back home.
Yeah, so Elliot finishes up the Raspberry Pi and notices Airdream software on the cover plate of the thermostat.
Yep.
That may come up later. And we get a commercial, Jamie.
Yes.
Any thoughts here at this point or theories?
All right. Well, okay, so I've had this thought in my mind, and I actually want to go back and watch episode 4 again, because I think that there may have been some hints in that episode with the people who were holding keys. And I have a theory about it, and I just can't really put much into words at this point, but I think that it may be possible that, remember, like in the early on, I thought that maybe Elliot might be Tyrell. I don't know if that's the case at all, but I'm wondering about the relationship between those two. It's still kind of stuck in my head, this thing about like when he went to Tyrell and Tyrell did not, like, he didn't accept the job and Tyrell hung his head in sorrow looking out the window. There's something there, and it's bothering me, and I can't figure it out. But that's all I can say. And, the thing about Mr. Robot, I really don't know. I'm more confused now than ever, as to whether he's real or not. I really want him to be real, but I fear that he isn't.
You think all these different characters might be just the many faces of Elliot?
Yes.
Interesting. Well, we come back from this commercial, and Darlene, back at F Society, Darlene figures out that the Dark Army has banned them somehow or backed out of the whole deal. And she storms away all pissed off at Trenton. Poor Trenton's kind of... She endures the wrath of Darlene a few times in this series. With the scarf and all this. Trenton seems like a generally just, like, quiet character. And she's, like, always... Her role in this whole mess is to just absorb the wrath of Darlene.
Yeah, she's either got to get out there and make a personality for herself, or they need to do away with her. She's kind of small.
Next, we get to see Angela's dad's opinion of Ollie. Angela goes to see her dad, and he tells her that Ollie has called him, but he just hung up on him when he called. Now, Jamie, I've done this before when I was a young suitor of women. Uh-huh. Would once in a while call the dad.
Uh-huh.
It's hard. It takes a lot of balls to do this. But it's desperate. It's also desperate. Yeah. Like, I really love your daughter. I'm going to take good care of her. And I know she's not sure what she wants to do, but I just want to let you know that I'm going to be a good guy for her. It never works. Never fucking works. Because the girl always does what she wants to do anyway.
All right, so this is serendipitous because the guy I was just telling you about, Billy did that with my dad. And he is the only guy to ever have done that with my dad. He called
up. That you know about. Maybe there have been others that you just didn't know about.
Yeah, that could be. That could be. But he did it, and he and my dad actually became friends.
Interesting. So it didn't work with you, though? It just kind of...
Yeah, it didn't. And I actually spent a lot of years wondering if I made a mistake about that, because he was an awesome guy.
Hey, you got to keep your eyes forward.
That's right.
Angela tells her dad anyway that she's pretty much done with Ollie, but she doesn't really tell him the real reason why.
No, she doesn't. But I thought that was such a great... I loved that relationship between the two of them because it was so different. I have never seen a relationship between a dad and a daughter like that anywhere. Not television, not movies, not theater, nothing. It was entirely unique. I mean, the way that they acted with each other and the way that the father spoke to her and the way she spoke to her dad, it was just so, it was perfect. You know, it was this great meld between, yeah, this is my daughter, and yeah, this is my dad, and we're two adults who can talk to each other. I loved it. I loved it.
Yeah, like they're old college friends or something.
Yeah, but he's still daddy. You know, right. It was awesome. It was
her great. Dad's going to lend her money and let her stay, and she's like really relaxed on the couch listening to this, and he's even going to cook French toast for her.
Yeah.
And he's her protector, pretty, and her friend, and like a real ally. I think she was safe in his presence.
That is the perfect word, Mike.
So Tyrell now, we get to see Tyrell and his wife sit in this limo and plot their strategy with, what's this guy's name, Scott?
Yeah, Scott, I forgot his last
here,
name.
I'll tell you, let me scroll a little bit here. Because they're pretty prominent in the next few.
Yeah.
Scott Knowles.
Yeah.
Scott and Sharon Knowles.
Yeah, that's right.
Front and center.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, so they plot that. And we go back to Darlene. That was just a quick little scene. Go back to Darlene. She's railing against her ex-boyfriend, Cisco, at the library.
Okay, but wait. Wait. Because in that scene in the car, I thought it was really interesting. More of just how awful those two people are. Because, you know, they're talking to each other, and, you know, she's, like, obsessed with the wife. And so Tyrell is like, why are you so worried about her? And she says, you know, he says something like, she doesn't have a weakness or something like that. And then the wife says, that's just why I'm worried about her, because people like that, I can't manipulate them or I can't break them or something.
Well, we're going to find her weakness.
Yes, we are.
Yeah, Joanna.
Yeah, okay, so are we talking about the same weakness, or are you talking about something I don't know about?
Well, her weakness is Tyrell. Her weak.
Okay, okay.
Sharon Knowles' weakness is going to be Tyrell.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this wife is evil, this Tyrell's wife. Anyway, we go back to Darlene now. She's mad at Cisco at the library. I think Cisco's just at the library hanging out. Why is Cisco at the library?
I think he works at the library because I think he was behind that desk.
So the Dark Army has called it off. Yeah. And their leader is this woman named White Rose.
Okay, so I gotta say, I do not like the way that they have handled this bit of story. Like, this thing about the Dark Army, I just feel like there's not enough detail there, like, for us to actually really be able to appreciate that portion, you know, of the story. I found it frustrating.
This part of this episode was frustrating to me too, Jamie, and for a different reason, though. Cisco just tells Darlene, walk away, it's over, forget about it. He doesn't know why the Dark Army is backed out. But the thing I didn't like, Jamie, if there's one weakness of this show, it's why are these F Society people so committed to this financial ruin of the world's economy? Like Darlene, you know, she's like so committed to this, but why? You know, she's not gonna. What is she gonna gain from this successful plot that they have to ruin the world's economy?
Okay, so I think that really that the piece of that is that there are pockets of extremists. There are people like that who are devoted to something that we cannot understand and would not agree with, that we think is not worth your time and maybe even awful, but there are other people who feel so passionately about it that they are willing to sacrifice just about anything, you know, to have it. It's kind of like, you know, what we were discussing with the Americans when we were talking about, like, all these different factions of people. You've got the Russians, you know, who are spies, and you've got the Americans who are counter-spies, and you've got these people who are double agents, and other people all over the world who have these causes that they are willing to die for, to kill for, to do any, to give up their lives for, because it's something they believe in, but it's something that you and I might find not even worth thinking about.
I think most often, though, we can see the reason why, even if we don't agree with it. But I can't fathom why Darlene would be so committed to this. She's so upset that the plot is not going to work the way that she wants it to. The story has not convinced me enough that she would really be this upset. And to just say, well, she, you know, you don't understand everybody's motivation, that's not acceptable.
Okay, so, all right, so let's do this. Let's say that, let's say that Darlene really is Elliot's sister. And let's pretend that Mr. Robot could be alive and he's really a person. And that's their dad. That maybe, they have become anarchists because they realize, because of their mom being gone and what happened to her and how she died, that, you know, they don't believe in this, the quote-unquote system anymore. And maybe that's, you know, if Darlene, you know, is one of those people who's a victim of, you know, the system, then, you know, and if it's in that way, then maybe that's what her motivation is.
But if that's the case, then it would make more sense to take down Evil Corp, not the world economy.
Well, I mean, that's what she's trying. They're taking down Evil Corp. And by doing that, they're, you know, they're having the effect of erasing people's debt, which helps humanity supposedly from a certain angle. But, you know, this is a thing that I've actually had in my mind and I have not brought up because it's just, it hasn't come up in our podcasts. But I've had this idea in my mind since the first episode. I've wondered why they're calling this group F Society. They're not calling it like F the man or F the system. They're calling it F Society, and society is people. You know, and it makes sense from the angle that these people are anarchists. But even from that angle, those are people who don't want government. They don't want any sort of, you know, impositions, or, you know, they don't believe in social systems, but not necessarily society. So I don't get that.
Yeah, that's all good until murderers show up at your door at midnight to just take what you have.
Most precisely.
And the reason it's called F Society is the U and the N fell off the building at the carnival.
Right, but that's okay. But that's like, that's...
I know, I'm kidding.
Okay.
But I think they do a better job of explaining like why Angela may even buy into it, because her dad's in such financial ruin with all his medical stuff that she, you know, she may want to wipe the slate clean. But Darlene, why Darlene? She's just a girl, a smart girl with computers.
Okay, so that's my question, and that is one of the things that makes me sort of sway, you know, back and forth about this thing, because I don't know what to think about her. I don't know. After this episode, I'm kind of thinking that she's not the way that I thought. I don't think she's, you know, Elliot's sister so much anymore. But if she were, that would make sense. If she were, then it would follow that she would want to destroy Evil Corp and everything that it stands for.
All right, Jamie, let's have dinner with the Knowles.
Okay.
Scott and Sharon Knowles, the CTO candidate.
Mm-hmm.
The Tyrells are there. They're having small talk and wine. And Scott turns to Tyrell and says, if you were me, would you trust you as your right hand?
Yeah, well, that's after he reveals himself.
So what do you think? So Tyrell wants to now be not the CTO, but the assistant to the CTO?
Uh-huh.
I don't buy that either. I think it's Tyrell's, and maybe he's just setting up Scott by making him think that's all he wants. But okay, he's there to undermine Scott and get the CTO job.
Absolutely. That is his plan. He doesn't stop at, you know, second to best. He thinks he's God. He doesn't stop at second. Yeah, but okay, so I loved the line when Knowles says, what did he say? Oh, yeah, if you were me, would you give you a chance? Or, you know, and then...
would you trust you as your right hand?
Yeah, and then Tyrell says, I wouldn't have let me in the front door.
Right.
And I loved that because, you know, that is an awful person who fully knows that he's an awful person.
They have a quick little interlude here with Shayla. And she calls Elliot. She's good at upselling cocktails at her new waitress job. She's just very flirty with Elliot. I don't know why they jammed this in here. It was just funny. Fun and funny, I guess.
Yeah.
Very flirty, Elliot and Shayla.
Yeah, and she was so sweet. I mean, she's so sweet. She really is. And, you know, and didn't she make a joke about, like, she used to have to put potatoes in a bag and it reminded her of putting, like, some sort of pills in a bag? So she's like, I have some experience with that.
So her drug running experience has qualified her as a waitress.
Right.
Kitchen helper.
Yep.
So back at the Knowles, Scott is holding a wine court like a asshole, snooty wine snob. Tyrell makes his move on Sharon. How do you not blow your brains out married to this clown? Right. She just looks at him like, I'm going to pretend I didn't hear that, or you're making a bad joke. She tries to, like, laugh it off. And then, Jamie, she goes to the bathroom and he follows her. Pretty bold move here by Mr. Tyrell.
That dude, I mean, wow. That I couldn't believe he did that.
He's relentless. Mm-hmm. It was actually a fairly sexy thing to watch this. It was like a sexual power move by Tyrell.
Well, yeah. And, you know, it's a really interesting scene to see. There was, you know, there was this movie. I don't remember the name of it, but it was Scarlett Johansson was in this movie, and it was like a couple of years ago. And she played this character. It was some sort of weirdly quasi science fiction type thing. And she played this character who was gaining all kinds of knowledge because of something, because of some kind of weird thing. And she ended up getting kind of like locked in someplace, like in prison somewhere. And she's like sitting on this, I don't know, bucket or something. And this dude comes in and he's like there to watch her, but he's like a no nonsense kind of guy. And she's sitting there, and then she looks him in the eye, and then she just like slides her legs open, and that was all it took. That dude was gone. I mean, like, you know, that was all it took for her to get him to let his guard down. And this scene reminded me of that.
You think that was her move? You think that was Sharon's move? Is to I thought it looked really kind of like submissive to me. Like she's agreeing, she's accepting Tyrell's advance. She wasn't trying to like overpower him.
Oh, no, she was not trying to overpower him. I'm just saying that open your legs moment reminded me of the other thing. But no, she absolutely was seduced by him.
Yeah, I mean, she was turned on by it. That was her way of saying, this is exciting to me.
Right.
And she gives him a little show.
Yep.
What did you think of Tyrell's wife sneaking the drink from the wine glass?
I didn't see her do that.
When Knowles turned around to like get a book on wine that he was going to show her or something, she gulps down a glass of wine when he's not looking.
Wow.
The pregnant wife. More comedy, I think it was supposed to be kind of funny. Like she's evil and funny.
I guess. Well, that's interesting too, though, because I wonder if that ever happens with, you know, pregnant women.
I don't think a one glass of wine is going to kill anything, but
well, yeah, that's the thing. And you know, doctors and people say that, you know, one or two cigarettes or one or two glasses of wine in your whole pregnancy won't affect anything, and so I guess that's the reason why a person might sneak that. But it's just kind of interesting to me that that was a part of this, because, you know, those are the things that make entertainment interesting, is when it really reflects secret parts of life that people don't ever show.
Well, it was kind of a counterbalance to Tyrell too, that he's pulling off this daring move in the bathroom. She pulls off this daring move drinking the wine that she shouldn't be drinking.
Yeah.
They're a perfect couple.
Oh, they are perfect for each other.
I like this girl, Sharon Knowles. She's Michelle Hicks. She was on The Shield. She was Walton Goggins' wife on The Shield. If you ever watched that show from the 90s.
I watched, I think part of the first season of The Shield. That was, like, crazy good show.
So while she does this, Tyrell doesn't pursue it. He just thanks her and leaves. Now, that's a total power move. Like, bringing her to this edge of, like, erotic sexuality and then just saying, nope, I'm stopping here. You're all excited. I'm going to walk out.
Yeah, and that's Tyrell. You know, he's always in control.
And we get a commercial and come back to F Society. Everybody's celebrating until Darlene ruins it and tells everybody about the Dark Army backing out.
Yeah.
We don't know why they've backed out, but she says we've lost China. And by the way, this is another direct conversation with Mr. Robot, or it appears to be.
Right, exactly. And that's the one I was talking about. And it weirded me out so much when he said, somebody talk to this woman. You know, that was when I was like, okay, this isn't her dad. This is, I don't know what's happening. Now I'm more confused than ever.
Shayla checks in again with Elliot, gives him another flirty little call. Like, if you're around later after work, come on by. And now, oh, Mr. Robot does some more real guy stuff. He takes and throws her laptop away from Darlene to stop her from... What Darlene's trying to do is execute this plan, even though China can help get everything back on track. Or the China plan not being enacted would allow things to get back on track. And right. She's going to execute the plan, even though it would only be a temporary setback. And, yeah, then Mr. Robot says, you're lying. Can anyone communicate with this woman?
Yeah.
And, Elliot actually steps up and says, we will rework it, just maybe not today.
Yeah. And she's, like, so sad. And, like, that was one of those scenes that I looked at him and I was like, okay, they look like they could be brother and sister. I swear, I'm so confused.
I can't, that's where I'm saying, I can't understand why she is so heartbroken over this.
Okay, so tell me something, Mike. Tell me something. Do we ever find out anything more about Dark China?
Dark Army?
Yeah.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Okay. Is it satisfying? Like, it's
okay. I mean, Dark Army is kind of a dark... We get to meet the woman.
Okay.
What's her name?
The leader?
Yeah.
Oh,
the leader
just...
of White Rose, one of the big shots.
Okay.
Yeah, it's actually pretty interesting. And the way the whole season ends is really pretty interesting. But you'll know more about Dark Army.
Okay. So you were just asking about Darlene... And why this whole thing matters so much to her.
Yeah, I know. We're beating that to death. But here's more of it. She's so upset. Like, I'm gonna bring it all down, even if it's only down for a month. It's at least saying some sort of a statement. Right? And then Mr. Robot says, well, somebody talk to this woman. If she does this now, they'll beef up their security and we'll never, ever get our real plan ever done.
Right.
So Elliot steps up. Now, what did you think of Elliot's analogy here? Jamie, he remembers his father moving sand on the beach one shoe at a time, and how long it would take to move the whole beach if it was one shoe full of sand at a time that you empty out, slow and methodical, over and over. Was that his euphemism for us keep on trying this little plot little by little until we get our beach moved?
No. I actually really, really, really loved that story. I loved the way that it was written, and it was just so really, it was so philosophical and just, you know, very interesting, because it was one of those things that just kind of took me out of the watching of the episode and put me in mind of thinking about things like that. Like, how do you change anything, and does anything matter, and, you know, does your life matter? And anything that you do, does it matter? It was so amazing to me that he had that story. I love the way that it was written, because what he said was, how many shoes of sand would you have to bring, and how many years and how many lifetimes would it take to empty that beach of sand to where you actually made a difference that the world could actually see? You know? And it's such a defeatist kind of a moment. It's an ultimately very extremely realistic and very human moment, because you realize that your lifetime is limited and the effect that you can have in the world is limited. And
well, one might also interpret, though, the exact opposite, that no matter how little sand is in your shoe, every time you walk away from the beach, you're making a change. And if you do it enough times... You know, you're going to run out of lifetime, obviously. But if that were to continue enough times, you would eventually move the entire beach. So you could take a look at it on the optimistic side.
Right, which was his dad's side. His dad said that. And you know, his dad was on the positive end of that argument. And he was on the negative end. And then there's Darlene sitting next to him, just absolutely devastated. And it was just so poetic to me. I loved it.
We see Angela looking at her dad's medical bills, and this makes it really clear to me why Angela is motivated to make some changes in the financial status of the world. But I'm still hanging on Darlene, so your words are profound, but they haven't moved me.
Wait, why? What's the...
Because I'm still not buying why she's so committed to this. I mean, I get it. We don't understand everybody's motivation, but... That's part of the job of the story, is to get us to understand enough to buy into it.
That's right. And that's why I keep telling you, like, if they, you know, the story, if you're in a situation like that, where the story that you're telling has so many pieces that are malleable and so many parts of the actual, you know, the skeleton of it that are not, they're not really strongly, characterized, like they're not firmly planted, then you would better have a really good what they call it, the Bible, like, you know, like your ultimate truth had better be real and it better be solid, because if it isn't, then people are going to be disappointed. You know, I will be disappointed.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I agree. I mean, the canon, the message of this whole thing is the world is kind of evil and big people take advantage of little people. I buy into that. This one character, though, has just kind of left me behind a little bit.
Well, it's not only her. I mean, that's the truth for a lot of these characters. Like Elliot, for example. You know, his motivations seem to have changed or morphed a little bit, you know, over. You know, Mr. Robot is just, I mean, the dude is insane.
They show us more of what's going on in Elliot's head than they do of what's going on in Darlene's head. Darlene is just upset and angry and desperate, but we don't see as much of the reasons why as we have with Elliot.
Okay, so I'm putting this out there for the world. If she is his sister, I get it. If she's his sister, I understand, because she's got the same history as he has, right? So then I get it. If she's not his sister, unless she had a parent that was killed, like the whole that died the same way as, you know, as Evil Core, then I don't know what her reasoning is. Maybe she's just, you know, nuts. And it's the same thing for like Romeo and for Mowgli and these guys. What's their motivation? Mowgli just seems like a guy who's motivated by his stomach, and you know, and Romeo just seems like Romero.
Yeah, when you said Romeo, I started thinking of Shakespeare. Okay, what happened in Romeo and Juliet? Were they? Okay, yeah, so Romero.
He's just a grouchy dude. So I don't get that.
Well, who in this whole damn show is happy besides Shayla?
Yeah, you're right about
Speaking of Shayla, Elliot and Darlene get home, and the dog is barking without Shayla, and Shayla's phone's on the floor. It rings, and who answers? Vera. Or doesn't answer. He's calling, but he's on the other end of the phone. And now Vera has some interesting philosophies. Here I am locked away, and the universe just brings you right to me.
Yeah.
Elliot on the phone. So somehow he knows it's Elliot, and he's getting a message through to him. He's connecting with him.
Yeah.
And Angela, on her run, reaches a fork in the road, and this episode ends.
Yeah, that was really, really cool. I love that.
What's Angela's decision?
That remains to be seen.
Not what's her choice, but what question is being poised to her?
Okay, all right. So if we look at what motivated her to go on the run, her father's debt, and the fact that Evil Corp is responsible for that, because the bills, when she was looking at her father's late due and overdue and all those past due and everything bills, there was a big E on those envelopes. So, you know, she's making a decision. Do I want to travel the path of peace, or do I want to get a little revenge or a little justice of my own?
Yeah, so the action she took previously where she was kind of blackmailed into them, but maybe she's now just going to say, well, maybe I agree that we should be doing this anyway.
Right.
Yep, so that was the end of episode 5, Exploits. Jamie, how do people reach you on the internet?
On Twitter, I'm at WordGirly.
And I'm at ScathingTweets, and this is the West Coast Project podcast for Mr. Robot. Do you have any final thoughts for Exploits, Jamie?
All right, so we all know that I have seen episode 6, so I'm looking forward to podcasting about it so I can unload all my angst about that. And if anybody thinks that they can give me some hints that don't actually tell me what's going to happen, please tweet me.
Beyond episode 6.
Yeah.
Episode 6 is Brave Traveler with numeric 4 as the A and a 1 as the L.
Okay.
ASF, what's that file extension? Do you happen to know, Jamie?
No, but I will look it up. ASF. ASF file.
It's actually entitled BR4VE-TRAVE1ER.ASF.
Okay, so it's advanced systems format, and it's like WMV files or WMA files, and it is another kind of file that contains video and audio and can also contain metadata in the same way that MP3 files do.
All right, thanks for that explanation.
You're welcome.
We're halfway through. You still liking it?
Yeah, actually, I like it better. I hated episode 4 really, really a lot. But I really loved episode 5, and I thought episode 6 was fantastic. Heartbreaking, but fantastic.
All right. Well, Jamie, I'll see you next week for Brave Traveler.
Awesome, Mike.
Have a good week.
You feel better. Bye.
All right. Thanks. Bye.